Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 5th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You know, have you gotten over the rocking yet? You know, are you still kind of swaying back and forth?
You know, see, I never get to see legs on the cruise. I'm always kind of an even keel, even though this guy, this time, because of the change in itinerary, the captain was hauling ASS on the way down to Nassau the first day, so it was a little rocky, but I'm fine, you know. I think maybe the first couple cruises I'd get off and you still feel like you're swaying back and forth, but not now. My body's adjusted to it,
yeah,
so
you know,
I'm hard.
I'm the same as you. I didn't have any problem. Jeannie, on the other hand, she's still dizzy like a week later. I don't get it. And even this one, like you said, and I think that's the alternative name for the ship, isn't it? Like the Monarch of the Seas or the Holland ASS, isn't that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The USS Holland ASS.
But on the way back, it was so smooth. He literally was like adrift at sea because he had so much time to get back from only like so far away. So it was a real easy trip on us. But, you know, one thing happened on the ship that I thought might be worth talking about for
just
the show.
One thing.
Well,
just one,
one thing that I want to talk about. Well, we talked about the other stuff last week, but I just want to bring this up. I have an inspired an idea for me for a new poker book. You know, it might even actually spark some of our listeners to come up with some stuff for us. You know, I'm sitting in a no-limit game the first night, and I was up a bunch, and it's actually a guy that I played against the whole time I was there at that table, and I kept beating him out of pots, and so I felt bad. But this one hand came up. I was in the small blind, and he was in the big blind, and I had pocket tens, and two people limped, and I thought about raising, but I really felt like I could trap somebody with this hand, so I decided to just call, and he knuckled the board, and the flop came Qu5-4.
And knuckled the board.
He knuckled
I love
the board.
That.
You like that? Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I'm back and rolling out the barrels. Prohibition.
So I'm like, all right, that's a good flop for me. I'm gonna bet here and see what happens. So it was a 1-3 game. So there was like $12 in the pot. So I bet like $10 just to see if I would take it down or if somebody would come along. So the guy that I had been just really brutalizing called, and the other two folded. So I'm like, all right, well, maybe he has a queen, maybe he doesn't, you know, but I'm pretty sure I'm ahead here. So the turn is like a 3. So there's like 5-4-3 queen on the board. And at this point, I decide to check to see what he will do, and he checks behind me. Now I'm thinking to myself, this guy, would he really, really, you know, just check when there's 3 to a wheel and I could easily have an ace or a 6 in my hand? And if he had a queen, wouldn't he want to at least get some more money or protect because it looks like I don't have a queen?
Right.
So he doesn't bet to represent the queen to put me off the hand. So I'm like, all right, well, maybe I'm still ahead then. I think I'm still ahead. So now on the river, a queen falls. Now I'm positive he doesn't have a queen. But instead of betting, I check. And it's probably a mistake. I probably should have bet there. But if he doesn't have a queen, he's probably folding and... if he does have a queen, he's going to raise me. So I figure, you know, he might just check it down. I'll take down the $30 pot or whatever. So I check, and he bets like 20 or 25. I think it was 20. And I'm like, really? Really? And I'm just like thinking, and I didn't give away anything. I'm just sat there and thought about it. And finally, I'm probably going to call, but I'm leaning toward a fold. Finally, when I say to myself, all right, maybe he has a queen he slow played, I'm going to fold. He pipes up and says, if you don't have a queen, you can't call. And I said, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Why would he say that to me? Why would he try to discourage me from calling? I think he has a queen.
I think it's a killer play. I mean, the guy's making his own rules there. And if you're a beginning player, you'd be like, oh, man, I've got a queen. Can't call.
Well,
this sucks.
He's telling me if I have a queen is the only way I can call.
Okay, all right.
Not if I don't have it. He says, if you don't have a queen, you can't call. So I'm like, all right, well.
Oh, better yet, what if you had a straight?
Yeah, yeah. So
Yeah, huh?
There's
See?
No way this guy has
He's
me beat. Why would he say that? There's no way he has me beat here. Because if he has the queen, which is the only hand I think beats me, really, I don't think this guy has, like, ace tray or six tray. But I mean, I know he's in the blinds, but he would have made it straight on the turn. Why would he just check the turn? So I'm thinking to myself, this guy can't have a queen, and he's trying to discourage me from calling. He must have, like, a five. So ultimately, I call, and he turns over pocket eights, and I win. And it was a good call, I thought. I mean, it was. I went through all the motions and why he would make that statement. And then that's what came to me. I thought, you know, there's these non-verbal tells books. You know, there's Caro, and there's, you know, Joe, and some other people write stuff. Why don't we have an actual verbal tells book?
A verbal tells book.
A book that were of all the phrases that people have used.
I like it.
Where they've gotten a call because of the phrase they use, or why they called somebody because of the phrase the person used, and why it made sense that he shouldn't have said that. Or, you know, you could actually literally break down everything. Like, we could break down this guy's statement and say, all right, well, clearly he doesn't have a queen, because if he has a queen, he's not going to say that to you, because it that means, you know, you're going to lay it down. And it's just, you can tell when somebody wants you to fold, they're trying to make you fold with their statement. And I mean, it could have been gone the other way, and he could have had a queen and whatever. But you know he doesn't have a queen. Why is he talking to me? So just like Scotty Wynn, you call, it's going to be all over, baby. I mean, really, that got a call, and that won the World Series for him. You break that down. And you can go through all the footage of all – there's so many TV shows now. You can literally go through all the footage and interview the pros and say, why'd you call there, or why didn't you call there, or why'd you say that? I thought it'd be a cool book. You know, all sayings in the book and what they mean. If you hear these sayings at these particular moments, you should call or fold. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm always in favor of good, interesting books. So I'm going to pass on this one, but I appreciate the manuscript. We'll be in touch.
You know,
I'm busting your BALLS. No, I think it's a great idea.
Isn't that cool? I mean, I think there's enough out there where you could literally just sit there and watch hours and hours of poker, get the pros on the line and say, hey, I'm doing a book. You know, just like our guest coming up. You know, he's talked to people all over the poker world about some of the stories that they've had. You know,
right.
And he's gonna share some of those with us later. Maybe we could do the same thing. Maybe the NEUP Nation can give us some stories of actual verbal tells, and and why they called or folded, or why they said it, and what the reaction was, and what the play they got. So I don't know. I just thought it was kind of cool. And it's funny you brought that up about passing on the manuscript. You know, back when I used to try to be a novelist, the first rejection I ever got was, alas, I must pass.
Alas, I must pass. Boy, I'm going to use that from now
on.
Yeah,
you should use. I'm going to use that with anybody who writes us. And,
I'm going to use that at the table. That's going to be my new verbal tell. When I fold, instead of fold or not say anything, I'm just going to say, alas, I must pass. I like it.
Yeah, it'll probably get old real quick, but it'll be funny the first couple of times.
No, nothing that we do, it gets old ever. Wow, that's a great idea. Well, let's have some folks send us some ideas at podcast@NEUPmagazine.com, and maybe we can cobble together a audio book that we could do on a show. How's that?
That'd be pretty wild. I'd be looking forward to that. Maybe they call in and use their clips, or they just write in and we read them on the show. But really, if you recall any instances where you got somebody to call you because of what you said or vice versa, it might be interesting to put on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so we got back from the cruise, Chris, and we didn't talk about this a lot last week, but I was crushing the games on the cruise.
Yeah, you're crushing the sit and goes. It was incredible.
I don't know who was playing for me, but it obviously was not me, because I am not that good of a player. So I came back, you know, that chest all out, you know, walking around, kicking little kids at the beach.
Kicking little kids.
And got into apes, and I'm like, you know what? It's crappy No Limit Hold'em, and boy, am I getting vilified for saying that. It's a crappy little No Limit Hold'em, but that's what I was crushing on the game on the ship. So maybe it's not just the cruise. Maybe I turned a corner in my poker career, Chris.
Mm.
And now I'll continue crushing everything. So I entered Apes, and no. Cruise, just a passing fancy.
Well, that's because it wasn't a six-handed sit-and-go.
That's right. That's
you're
right.
Already at the final table.
But no, in my defense, though, I'm not going to pay you a dollar. But I was under the gun with ace-ace, made a pretty large raise like I like to do. Got our good friend John Dennis, who shoots a lot of great photos for us, to push all in on me with king-king. Gladly call. Of course, he flops a king.
Yeah.
Boom. So it wasn't like I played badly.
Okay.
I played the flop badly. Because I couldn't get my chips out of the pot. They wouldn't let you take them back and do a redo. There's no mulligans.
Oh, man.
You know, our guest today, Kenny, he's invented a poker tournament series. And I think our next one we're going to create is going to have mulligans in it.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Okay.
Not revised mulligans.
I didn't really mean to go all in. Give back my chips.
Right, you could just wipe it off the boards. That would be awesome.
Oh my god, you'd piss off a lot of people, though.
Right, it's like instant replay in the NFL. You got a little red flag. You get two of them per tournament. You throw it in the pot, and it's a do-over.
Oh my god, could you imagine the nightmares? Oh my god.
Well, I don't think John's gonna do it. I don't think it's the second time he's knocked me out of Apes, and he went on to make the final table. So at least he put my chips to good use. But the winner, somebody we know.
Yes.
Rice F88.
Yep, I have a long history with Rice.
He's one of your nemesis.
Yes, he likes to keep me from winning bananas is what he does. That's his whole goal in life.
He's racking up a lot of bananas himself. I believe this is his fourth overall.
Oh my god, that's crazy.
He's getting close to the bunch.
The bunch, you know, yeah.
How many do you have to have before you can call it a bunch?
Well, the Brady Bunch were six kids, so I would say six.
The Brady Bunch is our Mendoza line
kinds
of bunches.
Yeah, six, you have a bunch.
Six. All right. Well, you're pretty close there, Rice, so get two more, and you can call yourself a bunch.
A bunch winner.
Oh, man, I don't know if you want to say you want a bunch winner. That might be a little odd, but he apparently had a commanding chip lead. I logged back on, and boom. I went to the bathroom. He was gone. So he must have ran over the final table. Sober Simon finished second. And also making the final table, former Players of the Year, Half Mike and Poker Geek MN.
Of course. They're always at the final table.
Yeah, I mean, how disappointing is this? Geek doesn't get the banana, and he doesn't finish second. I don't know how he goes home with the wife and kids after that. What? You didn't even finish second? But congratulations, Rice. We appreciate it. Remind us of your address, and we will get that tasty banana out to you. And our next event will be Wednesday, November 10th, 9 p.m., crappy old No Limit Hold'em. And our next free roll is Saturday, November 20th at noon. Horse. Now horse. We're starting to play poker, Chris.
Yes, that's the game I crushed. You crushed it and goes, I crushed horse.
Yeah. So finally, at the end of the series, we're playing real poker. So all you pretenders with your 600 player of the year points and 27 bananas, check them at the door, because now we're playing real poker. And a little housekeeping, too. We've gotten a couple emails. Folks might have noticed when you went to register for any of our events that our Heads Up free roll, which will be in December, had, as of this writing, 9,234 entrants, Chris.
Not enough. We need more. We need 10 grand.
That is a massive turnout for the nation that does not number that high. And, of course, everybody remembers last year's Heads Up free roll that lasted about 4 or 5 weeks. And so, obviously, when you see 9,200, that thing was going to last. Literally, when I wrote Poker Stars, I'm like, this thing's not going to end this year.
Yeah.
It might continue going on past next year's entire Ape schedule. So they agreed there must have been something that happened to the past or anything. So what they're going to do is they're going to cancel the Heads Up free roll. But hey, whoa, no booze. Let me finish. They're going to cancel the free roll, going to wipe it off, and they're going to recreate it, start fresh, get those 2,800 Russians out of it. And then literally they sent me the breakdown by country, Chris. It was like 2,800 of those 9,200 were from the Russian Federation.
Wow.
commies. This isn't Red Dawn, all right? You're going to have to come with a better game than that.
You know, I loved that movie when I was a kid, but then when I watched it when I was much older in life, it was not good.
Does not hold up. They're remaking it now, though, so.
Yeah, I heard that. It's not good either.
Jordan's in it. But they're going to recreate it, and for just this event only, and I'm going to say this about 7 times, just this event only, the new password, anti-up, heads up.
Hey, 2 ups for the price of 1. I like that.
Exactly. Just for this particular one single event, free roll, password, anti-up, heads up.
So it's just for this one?
Just this one. Just this one. So now, don't go to the Forza event try to, hey, Christmas God said it's anti up heads up now, I can't get in. No, we did not say that. We never said that.
So that's the free roll. So for the main heads up, it's going to be still anti up 2010?
That's correct. That's correct.
So just the free roll, anti up heads up, all one word. And I'm not even going to post it on the recap.
No, we're not posting it anywhere. No, so those of you that are upset that we share this with the magazine readers and the newsletter readers and all that, it's my podcast, don't share with anyone. This is your event. Not sharing with anyone.
It'll just be me and you. Nobody listens to the show this week. We'll play each other for the banana.
Hey, that's all right, because you'll remember the heads up. They were going to throw in, I think it's 16 seats rather than 10 because of how the heads up were. And I'm also going to go on record as this too, Chris, because I'm known as the good cop in this relationship. But on that day, people show up. And they do this, hey, what's the password, man? Foot down.
Yeah, not using it. I'm not telling you.
I don't care if your name is RiceF88. You're asking me what the password is, you're not getting it from me.
You better listen to the show, man.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, if you get shut out too bad, you know, you can pay the $5.50 next week.
All right, well, we spent way too much time on this, so we're going to move on to our favorite feedback section. And our good friend Tom Turley calls in, this involves his wife. You know, a lot of the people calling in, a lot of the topics these weeks, including people's wives. Have you noticed?
Yeah,
that?
I think what's happening, Chris, is that occasionally these wives are listening to the show, and they do the famous wife elbow to the ribs of their husband. Go, hey, how come I'm not on the show? What do I have to do to get on the show? I'm not good enough to be on Annie Up. And so all the husbands are like, man, sorry, I got to get the wife on the show. That's my theory. I could be wrong.
All right, well, let's make Turley's wife happy.
I just calling. I was listening to the show the other day and got a good chuckle when my wife came home yesterday from a business trip and she got stuck in a hotel room that only had a few channels. And actually, probably had more like 10 or 15 channels. But she was up there on Tuesday in Philadelphia, and she's like, guess what I watched last night? And sure enough, she sat there and watched the World Series. Both, she said she watched back-to-back. She always complained about me playing poker or just watching poker on TV. Here she goes on a business trip, and she's watching the World Series on the ESPN. Got a good chuckle out of it, but hope you had a good trip in the Bahamas, and hope to talk to you guys soon.
I love this, Chris. I love this because it is a new marketing ploy for poker.
It is?
Exactly. You've probably heard of these commercials, beef, it's what's for dinner.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that big Stetson kind of guy, beef, it's what's for dinner.
And pork, the other white meat.
Exactly, exactly. I'm going to say, poker, it's what's on in the hotel room. Nothing else is on.
Poker, it's what's on. It's hilarious.
Poker, it's what's on. It's the only thing. Poker, it's the only thing that's on. There we go. Nailed it. See, I just had to work it out.
There you go.
Poker, it's the only thing that's on.
Oh my God. Now we got to get that Sam guy. What's the guy with the big bushy mustache? The actor, Sam, whatever. Got to get him to do the voiceover for us.
All right, I'm gonna have to quickly. I've got to pause the show here so I can register that
trademark.
Yeah, we'll trademark there, so I get the residuals. But that's thing you see.
It's true. Only thing that's on TV in the hotel is poker and weather.
All right. Well, the hotline at 813-448-1120 was ringing off the hook. this week. Not only did Tom call, but our new friend, I believe it's Todd Drake.
Yeah.
Love the Drake.
Love the Drake. Gotta love the Drake.
Gotta love the Drake. He called in, too, and let's see what he had to say.
Yes, this is Todd Drake from Georgia, and I just got listening to the PokerCast about Joe and the crazy 4-8 limit hold'em player. And just wanted to say a lot of people would drive in an hour and a half just to play with somebody like that. Shoot. Sounds like the guy's getting his money in bad. How can you not want to play with that guy? I would actually open up my range a little bit, try to raise and isolate in him a little bit more. And shoot, in the long run, you're going to get all his money. I'd try to play with that guy every night. So just can't understand how you let some goofball frustrate you, Joe. It's just supposed to just tighten up, make him have a good time, and kill him, crush him.
Yes, why wouldn't you want to play with this guy? I love that. I love playing with this guy.
So, all right, see, I can play both sides of this. I get what our friend last week or 2 weeks ago wrote in about because they sap the fun out of the game. So I don't like that. But the Drake is right. You know, this guy's going to be dumping his money to someone. What gets me frustrated, though, is that they never dump it to me. They don't. You're like, okay, so you got to tighten up. That gets boring. You loosen up. Then you get everybody in. So here's the problem with the Drake's theory. And my guess is the Drake does not play a lot of 4-8. Is that everybody calls this guy. Everybody has the same idea, right?
Yeah.
So it becomes this this raise fest where it's like cap before the flop every time because everybody wants to cash the lottery ticket against this loser. In the end, we end up all losing. So what we need to do is start conspiring. That's completely legal in poker, I believe, right?
Yeah, no, not colluding, conspiring.
Right, conspiring. It's completely different. It's on a different page of the dictionary altogether. And we just kind of like we have a little hand signal or something and let it know, all right, this time I'm going after him. Next time it's yours.
I got the monster now. You fold. No colluding exactly. There at all.
Exactly. Inspiring. Completely different. That would make it fun, Drake. Other than that, I'm passing on this guy.
And the other thing, too, is when everyone plays against this guy, you're giving him the pot odds to draw at the hand that he
exactly.
wants. You
know what I mean?
That's
exactly.
That's the problem.
Oh, this guy loves people like us. So. All right, well, Todd, we appreciate you calling in, and this your call will be this week's hotline winner. Ding, 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 ding.
Yay!
And we are going to send you a deck of those gorgeous J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. And I'll remind you again, 813-448-1120, and you can win stuff, too.
We use those cards on the cruise, too.
Beautiful.
Every cruise, people love them. They're always commenting on them, and they end up buying them at the end of the week, so it's really, really cool cards. All right, what's going on? On our Annie Up News Desk.
The final nine players in this year's World Series of Poker main event return to the felt this weekend, and we'll have a new world champion, Chris, crowned by this time next week. ESPN's crew is already on site and will show free tape delay live coverage of the play without hole cards on ESPN3.com. And they're going to provide the same day broadcast of the final two on ESPN. And the most important thing is you will be there.
I will be there, and I'm scared as hell. I don't know what to expect. I know that they move into the Penn and Teller, and you know, I know it's going to be like 4 in the morning or 5 in the morning before they get down to the final two. And you know, my day is literally going to start at like 9 a.m., you know, and I'm going to be 3 hours different. I didn't go there to like adjust to the time difference, so I'm going to literally be up like 24 hours straight. I don't know what to do. I'm pretty nervous.
And go to the steam room. That's what Fassett would say. Go to the steam room, get yourself a steam, and you'll be fine. You know, every week on Monday, we do the Poker Wars live show, PokerWars.info,
right.
And you've been filling in admirably the last couple weeks, but I finally got back on the mic this week, and they asked me how long I thought the final table would take. And my over-under was about 15 hours. Am I crazy?
Man. No, I don't think you're crazy, and I think that sucks. Because that's like 3 or 4 a.m., because they're probably going to start at noon, but they're going to do all the pomp and circumstance. You know, I heard that they have all these guys are going to enter with like all these lights flashing, and they all got to pick their own theme song for when they enter.
Man.
It's kind of like coming up to the plate, you know, in your home stadium, and they'll play like, you know, AC/DC's, you know, big balls or whatever the hell it is that you want them to play. So it's going to be a real party atmosphere and everything. I just have no idea where I'm going to be sitting because I know I'm in the media area. I don't know where that is. And I'm a little nervous. You know, I'm afraid to walk because two of them, at least two of the guys that I want to talk to, and possibly three for our magazine, you know, are going to lose. And I got to walk up to these guys and go, oh, you didn't win $9 million. How you feel? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can do the whole Shauna Hyatt thing. Ah, man, how do you feel?
I am not looking forward to that. So hopefully it'll be like a group conference conference or something where we can just shout out questions. And
yeah, there you go.
You know, but I'm really looking forward to it, but I'm also not looking forward to it. I fly out on Friday. And also the man who knocked you out, John Dennis, our photographer, is going there as well. So we're going to be there. NEUP's going to be on site and doing full coverage.
Excellent, excellent. It's unfortunate that the media can't enter their own theme song.
That would be cool.
Maybe we'll put that in the notes for next year.
Oh, I'd come into OAR's Crazy Game of Poker, of course.
Oh, I was going to come into Stacy Q's Two of Hearts.
Two hearts that beat as one.
Yeah, see, I knew that.
I knew that song. I knew that song. All right, Dr. Jeffrey Cummings, one of the world's top Alzheimer's researchers, reports that his new study shows that people who play card games twice a week show a 50% reduction in the rate of all forms of dementia compared to those who did not participate in mentally stimulating activities. There's good news for you.
Yeah, and a smaller study that wasn't reported is people that produce a magazine twice a week report a 400% better chance of getting dementia.
I think you were starting to fall into dementia right there during that statement.
I was forgetting what I was saying right there.
It makes sense, though. I mean, you keep your mind focused and, you know, try to analyze and whatever, and it makes sense to me.
Yeah, and of course, they had to say mentally stimulating activities, so folks, you can't play 2-4 limit. Doesn't work, does it?
Oh, my God, I feel like you're laugh track today.
I might even throw in no limit hold'em because, you know, that's not really mentally stimulating either. So,
well, cool. Unless you're playing a six-handed sit-and-go.
Crappy little card game. All right, finally in sad news, animation artist Alexander Anderson Jr., who created the popular cartoon series Rocky and Bullwinkle, has died at the age of 90. Wow.
Wow.
I'm hoping I just make it to 45. This dude made it to 90. That's great. So what does this have to do with poker, you may ask? Well, Anderson created Bullwinkle after a dream about a moose sitting in on his poker games with friends.
Oh, my God.
UPI reports, and we want to thank NEUP Newshound Tom McDonald for sending us this news item. Always love it when our fans send us news items.
Yeah, you know, that's really surprising, too, you know.
What, did somebody send us something, or that somebody's dreaming about moose?
No, that the guy who created Rocky and Bullwinkle actually wasn't dead like 15 years ago. Good God. I mean, that show was around before, like, my dad was born. I mean, oh, my God.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
It was created before we invented color.
I can't believe it. The guy was still alive. You know, good for him that he lived that long. And, I mean, it's sad he's gone, but that's a pretty full life there, 90 years old. And, wow, that's pretty shocking.
So I guess the question we have to ask here is, Rocky doesn't play cards?
Yeah, what's the deal? Well, squirrels aren't good enough?
I mean, the guy dreams about a moose playing with the poker games with the friends, and he doesn't create the Bullwinkle show. It's Rocky and Bullwinkle. So where did Rocky come from?
Well, you know what it is they, you know, the squirrels always have the nuts, and he doesn't like to play against players who always have the nuts.
Very
so
good. I like it. I like it. I like it a lot.
Thank you very much.
Now, I also like the fact that Bullwinkle is probably the simpleton of the two, right? You know, yeah. Rocky's driving that car.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's interesting to me that when he's dreaming that it's the simpleton moose that's in the poker game with his friends, not the sharp-witted guy.
Yeah, you know, even Rocky was even prepared with the shades. If he was ahead of his time, he'd pull down the glasses when he's in a big pot. You know what I mean? You just couldn't have this guy in your game. And he was Rocky, so he always played tight. I mean, you can't have this guy in your game. You just can't do it.
Yeah, but you know, and Bullwinkle was like a lot of poker players. He learned to play in college at What's the Matter You?
What's the Matter You? if we don't get to the mailbag soon, man, we're never going to get back to reality. So,
all right, I tried to shave down the mailbag as much as I could this week, but as most good mailbags, it has a little setup here. So, bear with me here as we take Mike Paulimus from Jersey on a ride here. With the mailbag, he's got a pretty good one here, I think, Chris.
All right.
All right, it's Friday night. He's sitting at the 1-2 No Limit table at Mount Airy Casino in Pennsylvania.
We were there.
Just got back from there, right? Yep. Yeah. Jennifer Gray and Patrick Swayze were playing there. A new player sits two seats to his left, and his impression of him is that he's an average recreational player. We had bought him for 200. We're down to 160. Hey,
finally, we'll play just somebody's like down. Nobody worked their stack up to $6,000. I mean, finally, someone down. This is great.
Right. He's down $40. He's got 160 in front of him. And of course, he has 1,200 behind in his pocket in case he needs it. Yeah. Okay, Mike, you had me until that. I got 10,000 in my wallet if I had to bring it out.
Yeah, I got a house I can remortgage if I have to, you know.
Yeah. No, I can't show it to you. It's in my wallet, so. But 1,200 behind his pocket in case he needs it. He has dealt the ace jack of spades on the button. Two limpers that we raised to $10. The small blind folds, and the big blind, who is the new opponent, says, make it 20. Everyone folds. We call the additional 10. The flop comes ace, jack, jack. Pretty good flop for us. And our opponent says to us, how much do you have in front of you? I'll put you all in. And I'll pause here to say, hey, no one can put you all in.
That's right.
Put yourself all in.
That's right. That's not even a binding bet, actually.
Exactly. First demerit for this guy. our hero Mike says, I haven't played many playable hands the past 5.5 hours, and he flopped a boat, and he actually says out loud, you've got to be kidding me. This is absolutely ridiculous. This is so sick. And I'm actually considering folding this hand. Apparently, he ran out of time, couldn't say unreal or unbelievable. It's usually part of that. He takes about 2 minutes and shows his hands to everyone while I'm still thinking about it. And he says, my read was that he had pocket aces here. I say, this sucks, but I call. After thinking about three more minutes, he flips over pocket aces just as I believed. They hold no one-outers for me. Now, he says, my poker buddy said, you have to make that call. No way you could fold that, etc. Mike says he felt his read was right and he had pocket aces there. My read was dead on. But what makes a better table impression, Chris? Me telling the table I know I'm beat and still call. Maybe having them say you're crazy and then see I wasn't crazy. Or fold of hand face up. My opponent probably folds his hand and not shows. What do you think?
If you're looking for, you know, mileage out of this with the table, if you fold it face up, they're just going to think you're an idiot and the other guy's not going to show. No one folds a boat there at a 1-2 game and all you got to do is risk 140 and you got 1,200 on you. I mean, it's a great read.
In
your pocket. Yeah, supposedly. But you won't get a better impression by folding face up because they're going to think you're an idiot and the other guy won't show and then there's no way you're beat there according to them. And then they're going to think that you're, although they will think you're super tight. Now they'll try to run over you. So
yeah,
you're going to have the hand later.
I guess that's what I was going to suggest. You have to know your players. I mean, against random faceless folks here, it's tough to answer. But if you got the impression that that's going to make your opponents tighten up and start bluffing at you, and you can play back at them based off that information, then absolutely, I'd love to show that.
Right.
Let people take shots at me all night and just snap them off.
The problem, though, is you know, if you do show your hand and the guy doesn't show, they're going to be like, that was just stupid. And they may not think that you're, you know what I mean? They're not going to think that you're easy to run over. Maybe they might just think you're not smart. I don't know. And maybe they'll try to play over you. I don't know. But it just feels like you'd get more mileage out of saying, I know you've beaten me here, but I can't fold with this hand, and then show it. And then when they say you're beat, then you can go, see, I knew I was beat. And then, I don't know. Of course, I don't know what kind of mileage you get out of that either. They'll think you're a great player and avoid you, and then you could bluff them. So either way, you're probably going to get mileage out of it.
Yeah, to be honest, this is one of those things that I think that drives poker players crazy. You got something like this. You want to talk about this hand, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to flop a boat, fold based on your read, and not have anybody know about it. And they go try to buddy and try to tell them that because they're not going to believe that.
No way they're going to believe you.
Right. So you're kind of goading yourself into saying, hey, it's worth me doing one of these things just to show people this so they don't say I'm full of BS. And that's a bad way to play poker, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's weird that the guy, if you go take it from the other side, it's weird that the guy put them all in when he's got the absolute nuts there. I mean, the only thing he's losing, well, quad jacks. But other than that, I would think he'd bet it for value with only a $40 pot, you know? Why would he just put you all in for 140? It's just stupid.
Yeah, unless he had a read on you. I mean, I've done the overshove before, too, and it's worked out. But usually one out of four times does the overshove work.
Yeah, and especially there when you've got – you want to try to get some money out of this guy. If he doesn't have anything, he's got a fold. But if he has, like, one jack, you know, I don't know. It just seems to me like that was a poor play on the other guy's part because you're only going to get called by, you know – well, I guess you can't call him a better hand because he has aces, but jacks will call you. But I feel like you should have value bet that rather than, you know, shoving like that or trying to intimidate you and put you all in. That line just is meant to intimidate, and it's just weird. Real weird situation there.
Well, maybe that was part of it. Maybe it was, hey, I'll put you all in, and then you know, you ruffle the feathers, and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to put myself all in. Here's my chips.
Yeah.
See? Reverse psychology.
Thinking on a different level there.
All right, Mike. Well, we appreciate you sending that email to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we're going to reward you with a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys at PMSPokerware.com. I did not screw it up this week. And, you know, maybe, Mike, they'll have, hey, I flopped a boat, folded, really, believe me. That might be one of the shirts that you can ask for. I mean, she's real creative there, so...
Oh, man. All right, well, let's ride along with Columbo. We skipped it last week, and actually, in all of our haste to get ready for the cruise and everything, I posted what we felt happened, but then I didn't post the update, you know, the next actual.
Right.
So we don't have any forum reaction today, but we still have it here, and we'll get it on there for you guys to make sure it's complete. Apparently, we bet 600 on the flop, got called, moved on a turn, and we won a big pot. Our hand held up. So now... we have 5,500 in chips, and it's the 8160 level, and we have Jack-Jack in early position. We do what we only can do, and that's raise to 480, and we get a caller in the hijack seat. He's the only caller in the hand, and he's the big stack at the table, more than twice what we have, so we're in danger. Flop comes 6 of spades, 4 of clubs, 9 of spades, and we bet 800, and our opponent now moves all in. Do we want to call? We have 3,800 left. What do you think?
I think this is another one of those hands that separates the men and the women from the boys and the girls. I mean, there aren't a lot of flops here that we would rather see, I mean, barring a jack.
You know, puberty does that too, by the way.
Well, that's true.
Puberty definitely separates the men and women from the boys and the girls. Just letting you know.
I'm still waiting for it. So there's not a lot of flops that we would rather see, but yet we're put to a test for all of our chips with a single pair. Again, I hate no limit hold'em. Crappy no limit hold'em. So my gut, though, tells me that the big stack is bowling us, likely on a flush draw and doesn't care if he gets called because he's got outs. So, Chris, I'm going to shock you, I think.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to shock the entire nation. I'm going to break with the tradition. And I'm going to make this call because I want to double through this big stack. I think we're ahead, and I'm willing to risk fading two cards to stay ahead.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree. This puberty hand really just makes me think that this guy, you know, is trying to shove us all over the place. And the other thing, too, is what are you playing jacks for if you're not looking for an all-unders board and get it? You know what I mean? If you get all cards under your jacks... you know, what hand could this guy have, really, that he would shove with? If he has a set, you know, is he really shoving? It seems like an intimidation shove. If he has a really big hand, you know, to me it seems like he would want to milk it and make it like, you know, 1,600 or 2,400 or something. So, I don't know. I don't feel like a shove here means he has us beat. I think we're ahead, and I'm calling and hoping he misses. I think he thinks we had like ace-king, ace-queen. And just doing a continuation bet. And he's just trying to get us off the hand. So I'm calling and hoping he misses.
All right, let's hope we're right.
All right, let's see what happens and then set up for next week.
Welcome back to episode 4 of Ride Along with Columbo. In our last episode, we played Jack-Jack, saw a flop, and got shoved over the top on. I may think about this, but in the end, I'm going to make this call. First of all, a big stack called preflop and then tries to push me out of a pot. My guess is he was behind Jack-Jack preflop, and with this flop, that means I should still be ahead. But second, and probably more importantly, he's playing this like a big stack with a draw. TV table poker.
I don't think that is enough to knock a man out cold.
I'm expecting to see a hand with two spades here, especially a hand like 7 of spades, 8 of spades. If he has anything but a straight flush draw, I'm the favorite. Otherwise, I'm about 55%. So we make the call, and he turns over 10 of spades, 8 of spades, for pretty close to our expectation, a spade drawn and gut shot. So pretty much it turns into a race. Poker Stove tells me I'm about 57% to win the hand. The turn's the 2 of hearts, the river is the ace of diamonds, and he's stuck with ace high, and my pair of jacks rake the pot. We're going to fast forward a couple of uneventful rounds now. We are at just under 16K in chips at the 500-1,125 level.
Does it sound like we are missing something?
While we have changed gears and slowed down during this skipping interval, another player at the table has done the opposite and really ramped up his play. He got it all in preflop with aces against queens, then folded preflop against a huge re-raise, then doubles up after that, getting all his money in preflop with king-jack and outdrawing jack-jack. Despite having 15K in chips, I'm still not sitting pretty as we're at the 500-1,125 level. But when it folds to me in the hijack, I'm raising with king-queen off. So I put in the raise, and the small blind, who I've just spoken to you about, re-raises all in for 25-8. The big blind folds, and what normally seems like an easy fold becomes very difficult. What do you want to do?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
One of the great things about poker is the number of characters we run across on our travels, Chris, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
And today's guest is by far one of our favorites. We went up to Tunica. He loaned us his car.
That was awesome.
Come on, no one's ever loaned us anything, let alone the car. But he's lived all over. He's had dozens of different jobs. But these days he calls the Tunica, Mississippi area home, where he's a professional poker player, entrepreneur, and author. Kenny Peel is the creator of Bad Hat, a unique-looking poker hat that is as outsized as his personality and his heart. And he's also penned a great collection of humorous poker stories. Kenny, thanks for joining us from the road.
Wow, what an intro. You guys are going to make me, that's going to be hard to follow. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate that.
Oh, man, we've been looking forward to this interview for a long time now. I know you hit the road often to play poker. I actually hooked up with you out in Vegas, too, when I was at the World Series. But now today, I guess you're calling us from the IP at the Biloxi, right, the circuit event. How are the cards treating you out there?
Well, I just got here last night, or yesterday afternoon. I came in a real bad storm and pretty miserable conditions, but Dale Henson, Wild Bill Dale Henson, came up with me in my motorhome, and we were lucky to get in at the last second, and so we're in good shape.
Great. How many events are you planning on playing?
We played yesterday. Dale's through to day 2 today, and I'm going to play the 550 at noon today.
Great. All right. Well, we wish you a lot of luck with that. And then later this month, I'm going to get to see you in your home base up there at Horseshoe Tunica, flying up for the Magnolia Classic presented by Ante Up. I'm sure you're going to be there, right?
Well, I'll be there for every event. They're offering a World Series circuit event seat for Tunica's January circuit event as a prize to every winner of every noon tournament, and it's added to the field. It's not, or it's added to the purse. It's not part of the coming out of the player's money. So I'll be in every event.
Excellent. Great. And one of the very unique events on the schedule is something you helped to create. It's called the Bad Hat White Tiger Tournament. Tell us a little bit about how that event works and where we may see it in the future.
Okay. Well, Mike Woods, the White Tiger, and I actually came up with the format. And it originated with me playing a normal tournament at the Horseshoe in Tunica, and a young new player came and sat next to me and acquired a pretty good-sized stack before what appeared to be they moved him to another table, but they racked him up and he left, and I just thought he went to another table. Eventually he came back and he was pretty upset, and I said, "What are you doing?" He said, Well, I went to cash out, and they wouldn't give me the money. He took $62,000 in tournament chips up to the cashier, tried to cash out of a $250 buy-in tournament, and he thought they were going to give him $62,000. So we had a real good laugh about that, and then in our conversation, we said, well, why can't you cash out? Nobody's done that. You know, why can't you? So we started working on a format, and it took us about 4 months to develop it to where it would be a plausible, fun method to play where everybody would enjoy it. You wouldn't get knocked out right away, and you'd still have time to play, and the blinds wouldn't go up too fast, and there was a lot to consider. But we got it all done, and we copyrighted the whole thing, and then we approached the Harrah's in Tunica, because that's our home base, and they sent it through their legal department, got it all approved there, and then it went through the Mississippi State Gaming Commission and got approved there. And we started running them right there at the Horseshoe, and we've done it several times very successfully. And they've added it in as their one of their featured tournaments at the Magnolia State Championships. It'll be on the 23rd on Sunday.
So now this is like you had this like patent on this or whatever, right? Like you can loan this out to people and let them do it for a fee, that kind of thing?
Yeah, we license it out to different casinos. Anybody who's interested, they can contact me at badhatpoker.com. License it out to different casinos around the country, and it's not patented because you can't really patent something that is based out of a normal game. I mean, it's based on No Limit Hold'em Poker, and no one owns a patent on that. Everybody plays it. But our structure and the way that you play it and the blind structures and the way things change and when you can cash out, all the written material about it is copyrighted.
Okay.
So once you've done that, then you're pretty well protected because if anybody tries to write their own structure and they're using your written documentation, you know, using if they're writing the same things I wrote in my copyright, then they would have a problem. So we're doing just fine with it, and people love it. The players love playing it, and it's an absolute blast.
All right, go ahead.
Well, you mentioned that you you spent 4 months coming up with a structure for it. Explain a little bit more about when you can cash out. I mean, it seems to me, what makes it different than a cash game where you just buy, everybody buys in for $300 or something like that?
Okay, well, what makes it different is the house puts up money to the final three players.
Okay.
So so first place, second place, and third place will split up cash. And usually there's 3,000. If it's usually 10 times the buy-in. So if it's a $300 buy-in, then the house will add 3,000. And it'd be 50-30-20 split to first, second, and third. And that keeps people's attention in the game. They don't want to cash out, especially when they get down to the last few tables, because they realize that added money is waiting for them at the end. And it becomes a it's amazing to watch because there's a division between the normal tournament players and the normal cash players. The cash players are coming into this because they love to play cash, and they feel that since they can bail out any time they want, they have an advantage. And when we first started doing it, that's what we saw was that the cash players said, well, we'll get in that and we'll just beat up on the tournament players. It's ought to be fun. The tournament players said, let them come. We'll beat up on the cash players. And every time we get down to the final couple tables, there's usually a relatively even number. But the tournament players seem to do better because they don't have the fear of losing the money. The cash players are aware when they've got $4,000 in front of them at a table, and they've never had that much before because they're used to playing one, two, and winning $500, $600, $700. When all of a sudden they've got $4,000 and $5,000 in front of them and they can pick it up and walk away anytime they want, they become very cautious. And the tournament players don't seem to realize, or don't seem to care. You know, they figure it was a $300 buy-in and that's all I have invested, so they play more aggressively and they seem to have an edge in the who wins the extra money toward the end.
Well, now, a little while ago you mentioned your website, badhatpoker.com, and I have to admit I'm actually wearing my bad hat right now while we're recording the show. I'm serious, too. I'm actually wearing it. I love the hat. I want to know how you got the idea to create these hats, and was it really just to cover up that big bald head of yours?
Well, actually, it was really funny. I was a professional golfer when I started playing poker, and that was in 2001 when I started playing, and I always wore a golf hat because I've had some issues with skin cancer, so I always wore a big brim hat when I played golf, and I just continued to wear it when I walked into the poker room. And what I found was that it was a nice-looking hat, but it was for golf. And people would say, well, that's a nice hat there. I didn't realize the application to poker with that big hat on when I walked in there until people start saying, man, that's really a nice hat. That's a bad hat. And where'd you get that? And I get to thinking, well, geez, I don't want them all looking like me. So I told them I bought the last one. They couldn't get one. And And after a while, I had so many inquiries about it. I got to thinking, geez, these guys really want one of these hats. This is so maybe I ought to be the guy where they can get them. So I redesigned the hat and sent the design work off to a manufacturer and had them produced and started up a company. And by the time I'd gotten to that process, they were already calling me Bad Hat as a matter of course. I'd walk into a poker room and they'd say, hey, Bad Hat's here, because they'd recognize my hat. So and I knew that was going to stick when I got to Las Vegas one day. I walked into Caesars, and as I walked into their poker room, a guy back in the library back portion of the room jumped up and yells, hey, Bad Hat, we're back here. And I'm like, son of a gun. You know, even people out here know that I'm called Bad Hat. So it just stuck, and everyone's called me that ever since. And so I just named the hats Bad Hat because that's what they were calling me. It seemed to work out pretty well.
Oh, I love it, and I love it just as much as I do your book. You know, because I love to laugh as much as, or as more as the next guy. And when I read "Funny Thing About Poker," which is a collection of funny stories that you experienced firsthand at the poker table, or that were relayed to you from other people, now you do have that everyman look, Kenny. Aside from the hat makes you unique. But did somebody really confuse you with Jerry Yang?
Oh yeah, the weirdest part was that the man was dead serious. I mean, he thought I was Jerry Yang because I told him I was. He recognized my jacket. I was wearing a 2007 World Series of Poker jacket, a leather jacket, this very, very nice-looking jacket. And he made a comment, and I'd played with him about a year before in a regular tournament, not at the World Series. And he leaned forward and said, don't I know you? And I said, well, you might. I think we play together. And he said, where'd you get that jacket? And it says 2007 World Series right across the top of it, and on the back it's a giant logo. And I said, well, the World Series. He said, did you win that? I said, yeah. He said, what event? I said, the main event. He goes, you won the main event? I said, yeah, I'm Jerry Yang. And all the other guys at the table are watching this guy going, is this guy out of his mind? Does he believe this? And the guy said, well, yeah, I know that. We played together before. And we went on and on and on, and it was unbelievable to me that this guy actually thought I was Jerry Yang. So, and the whole story's in the book. It's a lot more detailed than that, but some of the stuff that happened from it was just hysterical. So, and these are the kind of things that got me to write the book in the first place. I was relating this story to somebody, and because I was just shocked about the outcome. And they said, you know, guess what happened to me? And they told me a really funny story, and then I said, you mind if I tell that to them? No, go ahead. So we got to the point where I had accumulated several stories from T.J. Cloutier and Tom McElvoy and several well-known professional players had given me quite a few stories, and I thought, boy, I'm gonna put these all together in a book. And it's worked out very well. I'm working on the sequel now called Another Funny Thing About Poker, which is just a compilation of other stories because I keep getting them.
Well, that I'm glad you said that because that leads into my next question. What's your favorite story from the first book that you yourself did not witness?
Well, I have a couple, but I think my favorite one is from Vince Bergio. And if you know Vince, he's a World Senior Hall of Famer and a very successful poker player, and has played most of his life and done very, very well. He used to have a box over at the Horseshoe safe deposit box in the poker room area there where he would keep his winnings and stuff, and he was a regular in that area downtown on Fremont. And it was back before they had the roof covering over it. They had the streets all torn up, and you couldn't drive out there. And it was, he came out of the Four Seasons after winning 30 grand in a tournament, and he's walking down this dark, it's a rainy night, and it's muddy and dirty, and he's going to go over to put his 30 grand in his box. And as he gets near the corner, these two big, burly, drunk guys come around the corner right toward him with beer bottles in their hand, and they stopped him and said, hey, man, you got $5? And Vince, being the poker player that he is, looked at these guys and said, are you crazy? I just lost $20 in there. And he just went off on them about losing his $20 and called them every name in the book and then walked right between them like he was going to leave. And they're like, well, sorry, Ben, sorry. You know, he turned around and called them a bunch more names and walked off. And he's told me that's the greatest bluff of his life because they were going to rob him. And he just took control of it, and he took control of the situation and bluffed them off the rob, I guess.
All right,
so
now,
that's
obviously
my favorite one.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. All right. Obviously, like most stories in poker, tall tales are common. How hard was it for you to track down the original sources for some of these stories?
Well, some of them I couldn't. Some of the older stories that were just not traceable, I did find the remnants of the truth. For instance, one about a live money game in the Borgata at their the Borgata poker room where they have a regular game there. They have a story that when somebody goes all in, they jump up around the table and start doing an Indian rain dance around the table. And I got the origins of that story and how it all started, and it's in the book, and it was a pretty seriously funny story. But, you know, when you try to find the people that are at that table 15 years ago, it's a little tough. But I did find out that in talking to people at the room and trying to get information, they go, yeah, you know, every once in a while, somebody over that table will jump up and start and run around and pound on the table and runs around the table and sits back down, and it's part of that story. So that sometimes it's hard to corroborate it. The most difficult one to corroborate that I actually did was one about a couple MMA fighters that were happening out in a small poker room up in Washington, and they got into a machismo thing about who would win the MMA fight if they fought. One was an older guy and one was a younger guy, and basically, well, this is hard to believe. I almost hate to say it on radio, but I did confirm it through the poker room manager, two waitresses that were there, several dealers, and other players. That one of the guys ended up jumping up on his chair and pulling his pants down and showing that he was making his equipment longer with an apparatus, and that proved he was more of a man than the other guy he was arguing with. And I thought, oh, my God, I thought my friend made that story up just to get in my book when he called me with that. But I absolutely confirmed it. And, you know, some of these things are crazy, and that was one of them.
All right, well, give us one last story that you actually witnessed yourself, something that you really like to tell.
You know, one of the first things that I ever did at a poker table that got me into this thing of seeing these funny things, or most of the time I cause them. I'm usually kind of a troublemaker or a rebel rouser, and I'm looking for opportunities at a poker table to get to somebody under their skin or get information, or I'm always looking. And I realized at Harrah's one day that they had a, as you check in, you had a 3x5 card that they would give you at the check-in window, and then you'd give that to the dealer, and they had your name printed right across them in big bold letters. Originally, they're smaller now. So I was the first one at the table, and I thought, hey, just for kicks, I'm going to memorize everybody's name when they show their card to the dealer. So I memorized everyone's name at my table, and I knew all their first and last names. And after everyone started playing, I decided I'm going to identify the weakest player and put some pressure on. So it turned out to be a guy about 60, 62 years old or so, sitting in the one seat, and I was in the four seat. And after we got going, I said, you know, you look pretty familiar to me. Have we played together? He said, nope, I don't play much. So I went. I just got back from the World Series in Vegas, so I waited a little while, and I said, you know, you look real familiar. There was a guy at the World Series that I saw him take out, Chris Ferguson and Annie Duke, and you look just like him. Nope, not me. I've never been to the World Series. And this poor guy was obviously not a great player, but I kept this up for some time, and finally I said, I remember the guy's name. They said he's a World Senior Hall of Famer. His name was Harold Fisher, and that's this guy's name, and he turned absolutely white. He turned absolutely white. And what the funny part was it not only did it polarize him, and eventually I got all his chips, which was what I was after anyway, but it made everybody else at the table not want to play him anymore because they were scared of him. And during the break, a couple of the guys from the same company, is that really Harold Fisher? I said, that's him. That's absolutely him. And he's admitted, that's my name, but I don't know what's going on here. So I bust him and get his chips, and these other two guys had not played him. And during the break, they had gone up to the floor and asked him if Harold Fisher was in the tournament. So he looks on the computer and says, yeah, he's sitting at seat number one, table six. And they went, oh, my God, that is him. So they tell him, this guy's a World Senior Hall of Famer, and he's in your little tournament here at Harrah's. So I went into the next day into the poker room, and the poker room tournament manager says, Kenny, you're not going to believe who was in this tournament yesterday. I said, who? He said, Harold Fisher, World Senior Hall of Famer. He starts going off about how impressed he was that this guy was there. And I'm trying to tell him, but it made it very difficult, and I finally got it across to him. But that's my personal favorite, because that was the catalyst that got me going. You know, I could take advantage of people if I just mess with them when we get started. So
that is just cold, man. That is cold.
I've done it many, many times since then, and you should try it. It absolutely works. If you can get the guy's name, I've gone up to the window and said, "What's the guy's name sitting in seat 7, table 23?" And they tell me his name.
Oh my God. That is so not right.
Oh, man. Oh, we love you, Kenny. We actually do. And Appreciate you coming on the show. Best of luck at the tables. Take some stuff down there so we can put you in the magazine. Our listeners can buy the hat for $29.95 or the book for $14 at badhatpoker.com. You got some other stuff there, card protectors and things like that. And they can come out and see Kenny and me in person at the Magnolia Classic presented by Auntie Up at the Horseshoe Tunica November 15th to 21st. Looking forward to seeing you again, Kenny.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys too.
Absolutely. And you got time to stick around for the hand of the week, or do you got to get to the table?
Let's go ahead and do it. I'll give it a shot.
All right. Excellent.
All right. Let's do it.
I have to tell you, I'm a field player, so a lot of times when I make a decision about a hand, it's based on how I feel about the players I'm playing at that moment. So I might not be the technically oriented guy that you think I am, but let's try it.
Well, this player is a member of the Senior Hall of Fame, so it shouldn't be too difficult.
His name
well,
is.
We'll be on the same page.
Yeah, it comes from Harold Fisher. He's a seven. No,
what do you do when a guy torments you?
This week's hand comes from Sean Ablett. He's from Calgary, Alberta. I can never get those R's and L's correct. He says at the beginning of 2010, his friends started a weekly private tournament on PokerStars, which he says is the best site online. I think we agree, Chris, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. And they have a group of about 25 people that play together. 9 to 18 come every week and play. So you got different folks moving in and out of the game, but most people are regulars. He said this particular hand, 9 of the diehards were there, and 6 players are remaining with blinds at 50, 100, and most of the quote-unquote jack nuts are gone. All right, he says
okay.
He's given us a couple notes on the players here. The cutoff has 355 units, and he's a tight passive player known for her ability to squeak into the money when short stacked. She is by far the short stack at this table. The button has about 2,200. He's a good, loose, aggressive player. And the small blind has about the same amount, 2,500. He's a new player to the game, but's been doing pretty well. The big blind has about 1,300 in chips. He's a good, tight, aggressive player, and our hero has a ton of history with him. We're sitting there with 3,200 in chips, and we've been doing very well in this tournament, so we have some respect. And
What's their position with the 3,200?
Must be early position.
Under the gun.
Under the gun would be it, yes.
Okay. Are you making that up?
No, he's under the gun.
I make up a lot of stuff, Kenny, but I'm not making this up.
All right, he's under the gun with 32. Go ahead.
Right, and in the middle position, players are chip leader, 3,765 in chips. Says this tournament, this player has played in the 17 previous tournaments, never cashed, and that we should let our current stack fool us. He's not going to cash this time either. All right, so remember, we're at 5,100. And we look down at ace of hearts, jack of spades. When you're under the gun with that kind of hand, six-handed, what do you do, Kenny?
And they're six-handed. He's under the gun.
Under the gun.
I've made it two and a half times a big blind.
Chris, any insight?
If I'm going to play this hand, I'm going to play it for a raise as well. So I like the 2.5, 3 there. Same thing. I agree. If I'm going to play it, I want to play it for a raise. I may actually fold this hand, but if I do play it, I'm going to do like Kenny and raise.
Yeah, I'm only raising 2.5 times a big blind because I want to get rid of the guys that are just going to hang around to see what their cards do on the flop, and also I can still get away cheaply if I have to.
Right.
All right. Sounds good. All right, well, our hero decided just to call, and here is his reasoning. He says he knows this is bad, but he did it for a few reasons. He wanted to encourage the small stack to shove, and remember, the small stack has about 350. If that would happen, then we'd be able to call if the rest of the action wasn't too aggressive. And secondly, he said this hand plays pretty well against the type of hands that some of these guys will play for a limp. Quote-unquote, any two will do. And finally, he says he almost never limps with ace-jack here, so he's going for a little deception. So obviously he knows these players a little bit. That plays into the equation a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we get a couple folds. The button calls, and small button calls, a small blind calls, and the big blind checks. So we're four-handed to a flop, 400 in the pot, and the flop comes 10 of spades, jack of clubs, 3 of spades. So top pair, top kicker, backdoor flush draw, and backdoor straight draw, I guess, too. The small blind and a big blind both check, and the action's on us now. What do we do?
Boy, I'm going to bet it with top top. I don't want to, you can see you got two spades on the board, right?
Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah, I don't want to be drawn to those spades, so I'm going to bet a substantial bet.
Yeah, me too. I especially even Jack 10 too. Somebody could easily have an open ended here or a gut shot.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I like the bet here. I like the bet about pot maybe.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right, pot size bet would have been 400. Our hero bets 225. Enough?
Mm.
That's too light.
Yeah. I mean,
he's trying to encourage people to stay in the hand.
They're essentially getting 2-1 on their money. If they have a flush draw, it's probably worth a call. And if they have a straight draw, it's probably worth the call. So I don't like that amount at all.
Yeah, I don't either. He's allowing too many people to have opportunities to play cheaply. I would make them pay right there.
All right, well, the button calls and everybody else folds. So we are heads up to the turn, 850 in the pot, and the turn is the 5 of hearts. So our board now is 10 of spades, jack of clubs, 3 of spades, 5 of hearts. And obviously we are first to act here.
Well, personally, I would put the guy on the spade draw. He's not going to, if he's got top top, he's not going to have top top. So I would put them on the spade draw, and I would make a bet that would make it virtually impossible for him to call with one card to come.
I agree. I think that any hand that has us beat would not have just called there because it's so dangerous. I think any hand that has us beat would have raised. So I feel like that 5 couldn't have helped anybody. I'm probably going to bet like 700 here or 800 even, just to bet close to the pot. Because I don't want this guy drawn on me for free.
Yeah, I might even make a pot-sized bet to give him a straight 2-1 to call with one card to come, because that's not good enough odds for him to play.
Yeah.
Of course, right. Sounds like it is for him. That's
all right,
what I would do. I would make a pot-sized bet.
All right. Well, our hero tried to narrow down the range of hands here, and he says he does not give him credit for a big pair or even ace-jack, as he would have likely raised that pre-flop with only one limper in the pot. So he thinks he's ahead of most of the hands in the range, but he wants to keep the pot small, so he checks to reevaluate on the river.
Oh, no. Never check there.
And then the spade of what? Or the what of spades came on the river.
I think it's easy to say that we shouldn't check here. Is there any value into at least considering the check here?
Not to me.
Not as far as I'm concerned. I would never do that.
No way.
All right.
I hate to be so harsh on your player. I hate to be harsh on your player, but I'm giving you my own personal perspective, and I'm trying to tell you exactly how I would play it.
Well, that's why they write in. So, they want us to be harsh, so.
Yeah. They're not looking for egos to be stroked here, Kenny, so.
Okay.
All right. Well, we do check, and surprisingly to me at least, the button checks behind us.
That's a draw. Right? He's not going to bet a draw with one card to come now, right? That's got to be a draw.
If he was under the gun, the button checks. Okay, so the button checks too, and we're still heads up, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, what's the river card?
All right, well, again, we're heads up on the river. The pot's 850, and the river is the deuce of hearts. So our final board is 10 of spades, jack of clubs, 3 of spades, 5 of hearts, 2 of hearts. And obviously, we're first to act.
Now
it's a value bet because you've got to put yourself in front. The only hand that you got to be afraid of here is trip threes.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
And that's precisely why I would have made a big bet at the beginning to make sure that if you had somebody on a small pair like threes, they'd go away. So I would value bet it here, thinking I'm in front. You, Chris?
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'd maybe bet like 350, 400 here and see if I get
called. Exactly. You want to keep them in. You want them to call, and we'll see what happens.
You know, maybe he has a hand like Jack, you know, Queen Jack or King Jack, and he might call.
Well, probably even worse than that, he probably has pocket fives, and he hit the turn, and that's why he stayed in. But because he had pocket fives and wasn't bet off the hand earlier, he was allowed to hang in long enough to take control of it. We'll see. Right, I think Scott's going to tell us what the guy has.
Well, our hero bets out 300. As far as a value bet, that's probably about right. You probably would have bet a little bit more, both of you, right?
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right.
All right. And the button raises us to 800.
Huh. Wow.
Okay. Well, then you just, at that point, I have to reevaluate. First of all, what's the pot now?
That would make the pot...
almost 2,000.
Yeah. Just shy
3,
of 2,000.
$3,000. I got to put in 500. It's a no-brainer. You have to call. You got to put in 500 to win
$2,000. 2,000.
Well, even that's 4-1, and you already put yourself ahead in the hand.
Yeah.
So at this point, you got to go with your initial gut instincts. But this is precisely why you don't let yourself get into this situation by not betting enough in the initial stages of a hand.
Right.
Because then you get into these kind of situations where now you're just hoping you're going to win. Before you were feeling pretty good about it. Now you're calling a bet that's essentially his value bet.
Yeah, I'm going to call too and hope that he just has either a misdraw or a worse jack than us.
If he had a misdraw, he'd raise a lot bigger than 800. He'd want you off the hand. Well, I'm giving the other players credit for being better players, but if I'm going to bet the river and I'm betting it with a missed hand, I'm going to bet enough that causes you a lot of pain if you call me and you lose. So 500 wouldn't do it. That's a value bet into this pot.
All right. Admittedly, we didn't bet enough at any stage of this hand to get this guy off the hand, but are we not confused at all that he just happens to wake up on the river and which is a deuce of hearts, which really can't complete anything? And now raises, I mean, doesn't it scream bluff here to you, even though it's not as big of a bet as you would have made, Kenny, if you were bluffing?
No, not to me. Okay. I think the guy had a reason for being in the hand from the first off, and that was probably pocket threes.
I don't know. It does feel a little like a bluff, Scott, just because he can't win without raising. You know, and if he was open-ended or had a flush draw, and like he said in the beginning, this guy's a loose cannon and never wins, so... It could feel like a bluff to me a little bit, but I can't get away from this hand either. I think that I got the right odds to at least see what this guy's
doing.
Oh, no, I was suggesting we get away from this hand. I was suggesting that we still think that we're ahead here, and rather than just call, that we should consider possibly raising.
But if the guy pushed all in after I made the bet, my value bet, if he pushed all in, I'd throw my cards away.
Yeah, what do you do after you raise and he does something like that? I would just be happy to take it down here. I'm only going to get raised probably by a better hand or a bluff that I can't call.
Yeah, and that's why if you're bluffing, you want to make sure the bet is so steep that a guy can't call you unless he's absolutely certain he's got you beat.
Right.
All right, well, the hero does make the call, and our opponent turns over. Queen of diamonds, king of spades.
Yay, we win. That's a draw.
Yep, we win. I'd say we got lucky, but we win.
Definitely should have bet more on the turn.
Open-ended on the flop, and real quick, let's look back from the opponent's our opponent's point of view. You know, he flopped the open-ended straight draw. We gave him a great price to continue drawing. The turn he missed, but we gave him a better price at that point. I mean, Kenny, do you ever, when you're on a draw on the come in position in this situation, would you ever consider putting a bet in on the turn and try to take it down right there?
Absolutely. I would absolutely do that. If I'm getting to the end of the thing and I'm realizing I haven't won yet, then I'm going to take some action to try to win it there. And by that, and if that doesn't work out, then I'm probably going away at the next bet. Because I'm not going to draw it. The last card open-ended, you've drawn 17%. That's your range. That's what you're going to have available to you. Is you're going to hit that out of 100 times, you'll hit it 17% or 17 times. So it's not a very good bet on the river that you're going to make your straight. So I'm going to make my play early on that hand if I'm in on the draw. Our guy that actually played the hand, you know, everything worked out real well for him, but I think he could have played it a little better once we know the outcome, it's real easy to go back and say, oh, well, gee, he did it just right because he got all that extra money out of the guy.
Yeah.
But the other side of the coin is that most of the time that's not what happens. You know, if you don't bet enough in certain areas where you let people limp in and you let people come in for small amounts and they draw out on you, that's exactly what they do, is draw out.
Great.
And the other thing, too, I think was interesting about the our opponent's hand, and of course I'm a limit player, so this is kind of standard and limit, but on a flop, when I flop open-ended and it's a continuation bet, I'm going to raise there quite a bit to try to get myself a free card to the river, particularly if I'm in position. I mean, I know it's a little different in no limit, but would we ever consider doing that as well?
It would depend on the circumstances and the players I'm playing against. There's a lot of factors that would make me alter the way I would play something or there's a lot of potential there, but I can't say for sure what I would do unless I saw the situation.
Yeah, a min raise is kind of powerful there too. You know, that gets you the free card if you're in position, and it's almost like
true.
A limit hand too. I do like a min raise there when I got a big draw.
Yeah, a min raise is not a bad idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you get top pair, you're getting a call. If you got top, you're going to get a call. You know,
right.
If you make the min raise with the idea that you're going to try to get the guy off the hand, if you make a min raise, that's probably not going to be enough to scare him off the hand for that small amount with top. Now, if he only had top pair, he's probably gone.
This guy's lucky he didn't turn two pair, because this guy would have made Broadway and blown him off. So he's actually lucky it didn't work out that way.
All right, Sean, we appreciate you writing in to us. And everyone else, send your hands of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll break them down, and we'll send you some great swag. And this week, in honor of our valued guest, Kenny Peel, we are going to send you a quality bad hat from badhatpoker.com. Check that out. And we appreciate Kenny for loading us up with a couple last time we saw him.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me. It was good to talk to you, and I'm looking forward to seeing you both again real soon.
Thanks, Kenny. Good luck up there.
Thanks, pal. Bye-bye.
Take care. Another good show. I'm glad that Kenny stuck around for Hand of the Week. It's always nice to have, you know, a pro help us out with it.
Yeah, I always liked a different perspective, and you know, because obviously I don't know what I'm doing, and the jury's out on whether you know what you're doing. So
hey,
you can bring anybody in, even a third grader.
The good thing is, though, the jury could come back and tell me I know what I'm doing. That's the good thing. They're still out there deliberating. They could come back and say, you know what, you're not so bad. All right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Logg.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Yeah. I love it. I'm in my new office. We finally got it all set up this week. So
what is that, the room to the right in the hallway?
Yeah.
That's cool. Very good. So you're right across from the toilet now. You could probably stream it from there.
Yeah. Laura's like, you know what I hate now? Because when your door to the office is open, the neighbors can see me pee, so I got to shut the door. Like, now, I already talked to them about it. They're cool.
Oh, my God.